Medical science as we know it would never have progressed beyond leeches, toad spells, and bloodletting if unscrupulous doctors and researchers hadn't robbed graves centuries ago and stolen bodies.
You and I should work together.
You mean we would sell the bodies to the doctors together? To dig them up?
There'll be no digging. The kirkyards are too well guarded. We will, so to speak, burk them.
The Grinch himself, Boris Karloff, playing a body snatcher in the 1945 movie of the same name from a much older Robert Louis Stevenson story. The use of human tissue to advance science has always been permitted within attention of morality and privacy. Anything that may be taken from your body, for instance, in the course of surgery or a biopsy could end up in a research experiment. And in most cases, samples are anonymized, identity-free. But now the federal government wants to require that every patient consent to future research using their tissue if they need a biopsy or a blood test. Are we seeing this moral tension raising its head once again and possibly pushing back on science? Joining us to talk about this is Alta Sharo, professor of law and bioethics at the University of Wisconsin. She also served on President Bill Clinton's National Bioethics Advisory Commission. Alta, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So if I check a box on a, not yet existing but soon to be existing form, which says I don't want any of my tissue to be studied, am I essentially engaging in an impulse not unlike, deciding not to be an organ donor, that it's just too creepy as far as I'm concerned? Or are there valid privacy reasons, in your view, for checking such a box?
There are valid reasons, but I don't think they're nearly as compelling as people imagine, because the vast majority of this research is going to concern aggregated data. Nobody's particularly interested in looking at your background or my background. What they want is millions of backgrounds so that they can correlate what they're seeing in the tissue with what they're seeing in public health outcomes or in aggregated medical records. So that's one reason people need not be so terribly worried. The second is that even though this information is very useful in the aggregate, on an individual basis, it's remarkably not useful. Knowing your particular genetics actually doesn't tell us very much at all about you and your particular susceptibilities, except for a very narrow range of diseases that have a strong genetic component. The things that we tend to worry about, the cancers, the heart diseases, the strokes, the dementias, are all multifactorial. So having the gene sequence is not going to reveal anything about your future that is particularly useful on your individual basis.
But isn't there an argument, though, and if we think of the Rebecca Skloot case, where tissue that's still being used in research today by scientists, while it produced all kinds of medical miracles, it also bespoke a certain arrogance on the part of the medical community for treating the Skloots as medical specimens and not really thinking about them as a family. And that was reversed by the remarkable book that was written about that case. But do you think there's an argument for medical science perhaps needing to not be so arrogant and assuming that all medical tissue belongs to it unless somebody opts out?
Well, let's first remember that the Skloot book describes a case that could not occur under the current rules. This was not a case in which the tissues had been properly de-identified, and that's exactly why the whole family became involved in this research and, yes, was studied without any kind of personal option to participate or not. But to your deeper question about the arrogance, I think that there is a need for people generally to understand the degree to which we have a social compact here, and that all of us benefit from this research, which is why we would like to make it possible to have as much participation as we possibly can. The current rules are very protective of our interests. They make sure that if there's identifiability in those tissues, that we do get a chance to say yay or nay. It's only with unidentified tissues that scientists can use this as they wish. The tissues that are left over after a surgery and have no name, no code, no nothing attached to them are what the scientific community uses. So the better question is, do we really want to say it's arrogant for the scientific community to take advantage, essentially, of the trash that we leave behind to try to understand the nature of disease.
Finally, why is it the case that when the traffic in human tissue is revealed, as was the case in the Planned Parenthood situation of the use of fetal tissues, that it evokes such a huge response? I mean, you know, I'm tempted to say, you know, we put a man on the moon, you know, the people walk around with iPads these days. It's a very sophisticated technological society, yet the notion of tissue trafficking on any level seems to bring up some kind of throwback impulse of disgust that is really counterproductive. Why is it still there? Why is it still relevant? Why does it work?
I think there's going to be different reasons for different kinds of tissues, but you're correct that there's often a very strong public reaction when they first hear about something that they didn't completely understand was going on for years and decades. So in the case of the fetal tissue research, I think that people were completely unaware that this tissue has some kind of medical value and was being used, and had imagined that fetuses were being buried or somehow being treated the way you would any other human remains. The second fear was that somehow it was going to encourage the number of abortions, which has been disproven, but it was a concern. Similarly, when you hear people get upset as they learn about tissues from organs, or even organ transplants of whole organs, they worry that this is somehow going to affect our willingness to try and give medical care to people who are close to death. And they want to be sure that there are no such incentives to change the way we treat people medically. Those are two very different kinds of reasons. Third is when there's money involved. And years ago, there was quite a lot of outcry when people realized that various kinds of tissues like bone and skin that were being donated by families from the deceased were then being machined and manipulated into things we use for implantation to save people's lives or protect their health, but that the companies that did this very sophisticated work were making a profit. And that became the source of controversy. So having a general understanding on the part of the public about what it takes to do these things is very helpful. Francis Collins talked about making patients more participatory. That's very helpful. But it is also the case that people need to understand that the current system, which would be unchanged, is one in which anything that really reveals something about them personally still does require that they give personal permission for that use of the tissue.
Altachar is a professor of law and bioethics at the University of Wisconsin. She served on President Bill Clinton's National Bioethics Advisory Commission. Alta, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.